Good morning and welcome to Jump in Tucson. I am your host, Ted Maxwell. Matt Neely is behind the glass and in this hectic day, keeping me on time and on target as it is election day. The purpose of the engagement hour is to encourage you to get involved. We all know we have rights and responsibilities. We're a nation bound by shared values of freedom, liberty, and equality. And with that comes some rights and responsibilities. For some, that includes service to our country and to our communities. But the most important and sacred value we've got, or right we have, is the right to vote. And so today is the day. If you haven't, get out there. If you haven't been listening to us and you still have your ballot in your hand, yes, go turn it in. Don't expect it to be counted right away. It will take a couple days. So we've been warning everybody on that, but get it in. Vote. That is absolutely critical. There's nothing more, like I said, sacred is our right, and our true responsibility is to be an informed voter. So make sure you know what you're doing when you step into that ballot box. Get out there and get it done. And then we'll all sit together, see what the results are tonight. Hopefully we'll know some of the election results and some of the folks who will be serving us as elected officials and some of the propositions that may or may not get across the finish line. But for some, we're going to have to wait. And I ask everybody to recognize that waiting is okay. It's important to get it done properly. Christy Simone and I on Wake Up Tucson just talked about some of the things we could do to fix some of those delays and others, but that's a work in progress. So today we're going to focus on the elections, and I get the honor of having Mike Noble with me. Mike is, for full disclosure, he's the leader of the entity that I believe does some of the strongest polling in the state of Arizona. He's become a friend over the years, and I don't hold it against him that he's an ASU graduate. So, Mike, I hope you can hear me loud and clear, and thank you for joining us this morning.
Oh, I can hear you, Ted, and clearly I heard your jab on my Sun Devils. So,
I'm
just kidding. I married a Wildcat, so.
That's why I like you. It's one of those things, Mike. I enjoyed when you came down a couple months ago and we went sat up in the Sands Club and you were willing to get out there on the balcony and let me take a picture of the two of us with the big A from the football field in the background, and then you send it off to at least to your wife, maybe not to the rest of your friends. You don't want them to get angry at you, but
I sent to her, but I didn't post it publicly. But it's a memory for you out there.
It was good. I enjoyed it. All honesty, I do appreciate all you do. So can you just give our listeners a little insight to how you got engaged in this thing called polling and analysis of elections and election processes and how to get things done in our current systems?
Yeah, no, I'm happy to share my, origin story. If I was a Marvel superhero, just much nerdier than the ones that are currently out there. And basically, I started in public affairs or politics about when I came out of college back in 2007. So almost two decades ago, I came out. I worked in political campaigns. I started with, at the time, County Treasurer David Schweiker, now Congressman David Schweiker. Started there early, and I started my own political consulting firm when I was age 25, which I had no idea that I was very young to be a consultant until I think it was this five-term incumbent. I was his advisor on his race, and we're sitting there going through his strategy stuff, and he has this epiphany in the middle of our meeting, and he goes, "I just realized I have a grandson your age. Actually, he's older than you."
Well, I'll give you credit. That was bold going into the political world at that age, but
looking back, hindsight, yeah, it was bold at the time. It was dumb, because I frankly didn't know any better. But it was interesting. So there's a point to it is that basically I got experience really early. You really don't like politics is one of those things you cannot just be. You can't just go to a class for it or get a certification. Like you literally just learn by doing it. And I've done it full time as a professional career ever since college. So I did about 8 years total of campaign stuff. I was a full blown general consultant, but which is like the highest you can go in the campaign world when I was age 28. And it was fine, but I think it takes a unique person to be a general consultant. But when you are, you know, you work with, TV ad buyers, you work with direct mail vendors. Like there's an advisor specialist for like every little thing, fundraising. One of them was pollsters. I worked with pollsters as well. And so I got some, that was my first kind of exposure to it. And then it was after when the elections were over, I was like, you know what? I think I could do this polling thing. Again, just kind of jumping into something. And I started messing around with it in the off year. And it was actually back in 2016 when I was starting it. I was the first person to show Trump up huge in Arizona, which at the time it was a 14-way Republican primary, which typically previously for races for president, you'd have, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 candidates, but you'd never see, you know, 14 candidates in a race. And when you have 14, if you're up by 5-10 points, you're doing backflips, right? But I put a poll out showing Trump up, it was like 30 points over everybody else. Like he was up huge in Arizona. And that's kind of was where I made it to the next level, because interesting about polling is that people trying to break into the industry, I find it was very tough ceiling, because they're like, who's published you? I'm like, no one, but you could be the first. They get real quiet. They hang up. And, then interesting. So Trump, and I end up correctly predicting Trump blowing out the primary. And then also I correctly predicted him winning the presidential election. Then 4 years later, I predicted that Biden would carry Arizona by about a point, and no Democrats carried Arizona in 2 decades, not since Bill Clinton. So that was kind of a bold thing. And 4 years ago, they're like, you know, you're America, or like you're a MAGA person or whatever. And then the next year cycle, they're like, you're a liberal, you're this, that, and the other. And here's the thing, I wound up being correct. So at the end of the day, journey, I've been doing public opinion polling for about a decade or so now. But one thing I'd like to hang my hat on, we were 11th. So we're a Phoenix-based firm, but we service much of the Southwest. So Arizona, Nevada, Utah, we got a lot of clients out there, and then national. But we, for us, we were actually ranked number 11 overall in the country among, you know, the Pew Research of the world, Gallup, Rasmussen, all the names you could think of out there. So everybody, we were number 11 in the country, but what I was most proud of, we were number one in the Southwest region, because at the end of the day, as a nonpartisan pollster, because you basically have a Democrat pollster, a Republican pollster, or a nonpartisan, we're the rarest of the breed. And it's, are you loyal to the red team, loyal to the blue team? Or I like to say, are you loyal to the truth? Because at the end of the day, I don't care who wins. I care about, you know, being correct based on the data, not based on all this punditry, et cetera, for we can kind of have a sense of what our reality is and what expectations we can expect.
Well, Mike, I stated it earlier. I have faith in a lot of your numbers. I'm looking forward to seeing how you do this year, because that faith can be shattered real quickly. But it's a different year this year. And you pointed out you're nonpartisan. And I think that's what makes pollsters different. We get bombarded with data from both parties showing what the polls are.
Yes.
And I'm telling you, I've seen ones from Gallego's campaign that shows he's losing by 6%. And I've seen ones that, that shown he's winning by 4. Those partisan, if a polling organization is partisan, they're basically doing the polling to get the results they need for the party. And that's the challenge I have with partisan polling organizations, and I think that's what makes you more effective. Is that a recent change, or has that always been around?
Well, all right, so a couple parts there. First off is that, so it's not all partisans are bad. It's just, at the end of the day, think of human nature, right? You're typically going to do something that serves you. And think of, for my 2 decades in politics, best way to describe it is like, think about it as like, it's a bad example, but it like accentuates the point. It's like basically working in the mob, right? And, but you know, like a nerdy, nobody gets killed type of mob, like just, anyways, but that type of culture in a sense where, you basically have red team, blue team. And, when you're polling, so let's say I'm your pollster, you're running, you've spent millions of dollars on this race. And I go, hey, I just got our poll back and it shows you down 5 points. do you think that you would allow me to release that? Hey, you're getting your butt kicked. Like, no, you're not going to allow that. And so it's just, I think the inherent issue is bias, is because when you're trying to look at something objectively, even the smartest people, if you have bias injected in there, so for example, let's say you're looking at the election, of course, your goal is to win. And okay, when you're looking at it, half the battle is, okay, who's going to turn out to vote and what is my expected number I'm going to get among these key demographic groups? So when you're sitting there doing that, I've seen it time and time again, folks that are really smart, but they're more partisan, they will kind of extend themselves. It's almost like when shopping for a house, you set your budget, like, okay, I'm only going to spend up to $300,000. And then you start looking for houses, and then next thing you know, you're looking at like $325,000, $350,000. You're like, you know, you shouldn't, but you start extending yourself. But I think it's the similar scenario. And at the end of the day, both teams are playing, because here's the thing, for the game of power, which that's actually what running for office is that if you win, you get everything. You get the levers of power, you get get to appoint all these positions, all that. You get to make legislation. Here's the thing, if you lose just by one vote for second place, you get nothing. You don't even get a participation trophy. So it's a very all or nothing game. And so they're going to do everything they can strategically to win. But there are some definitely very good pollsters, but a lot of them, usually they won't publicly put out the results. And when they do, they might do some funny stuff with their weighting or, move some stuff around to make it look not as bad as maybe it is.
And I think that's a great point. And I'll apologize to all the partisan pollsters that I may have insulted, because there are reasons for them.
But that's okay.
No, there are reasons for them. And we're going to quote Ricky Bobby really quick. Second is just the first loser in politics. NASCAR and politics. Never thought you'd hear that on Jump in Tucson, that's for sure. So, Mike, I want to take a break here, but when we come back, I want to start putting you on the spot with what you think's going to happen when we see the results. So we'll be right back. That's Mike Noble with Noble Predictive Insights. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk, and we'll be talking with you after the break. Good morning, Tucson, and welcome back. You're listening to Jump in Tucson. This is the Engagement Hour, and Matt Neely's got full control on the bumping music today. I've noticed he so far stayed with the instrumental, so I told him to express his emotions on how he's feeling on this election day.
And one of these days, Pink Floyd. Yeah,
that's it. I appreciate it, Matt, as always. So my guest right now is Mike Noble, the founder and CEO of Noble Predictive Insights, one of the premier polling organizations in the nation, which I appreciate you sharing us where you ranked on that. And if you want more information on his organization, NoblePredictiveInsights.com is the website. So, Mike, welcome back.
Great to be back.
Hey, congratulations, by the way, on your expansion into Nevada and Utah. And I believe this may be the first year you're also going to put out some nationwide polling prediction numbers.
So this has been on my bucket list for about, 5 years or so now. I mean, one was expand regionally in Nevada and Utah, which we've had a lot of success there, which has been great. But one was national. So the national popular vote, which we know is not very indicative of how, the race for president is going to go, because the national popular vote is, just the total votes in the country, where what we choose for president is based on the electoral college, or what a lot of people refer to as the road to 270, which is basically the 270 electoral votes you need to win to become the most powerful person on the planet. And so when you look at it, for us, we have actually a poll on record in not only in Arizona, Nevada, and Utah, but we also have one on record for the national popular vote, which I believe we are the first Arizona-based firm to ever have a poll on record for the national popular vote. And that's where you go against the biggest names in the industry. So for us nerds over here, it's basically where I see is like where you can have, you can go against the best of the best in the business, and you get to see how you stack up. So it's been kind of a wish for mine. And I don't know, we'll know here in like, 18 hours or so.
Well,
we stack up.
And here we go. And Mike, I texted you at the break. I do want to have you back, because there's so many questions I've got about the art of polling, especially in today's modern day of electronics. But not today.
It changed a lot.
Today, okay. It's time to put you on some results. You just talked about the presidential election. So what are you showing for the nation and specifically for Arizona?
Yeah, so for the nation, when you look at the national popular vote, Harris has roughly a 2-point edge. If you look right now at the aggregators, like 1.7 to 2, but basically 2, which is kind of a bit of a lower watermark for a Democrat in general. At the same time, in the last two presidential elections, Biden and Hillary are both higher numbers than where Harris is currently at right now. And both of those elections were very close. But when you look at the national, so as I said, it's an electoral college. So it's going to come down to these seven states. Seven states are going to be North Carolina. So when people are watching tonight, where you really want to focus is on where's North Carolina going? Where is Georgia going? Where is Arizona going? Nevada? And then the blue wall, which when people reference the blue wall, they're talking up there in the Great Lakes area, which is basically Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. And right now we look at, I think of the seven battleground states, I actually think Trump is in the best position. In Arizona, we actually put our poll of record out. We had Trump plus one, but I think he could win anywhere from 1 to 4 points, roughly in there. Harris does have a chance to win. It's just odds are a little bit against her in the Arizona. And a lot of that's due to the pocketbook issue, since people come here for low cost of living, and people have been really hitting the pocketbooks the last 4 years, and then immigration, since we're a border state. And then, where I think I see it going tonight is that it's all going to be very close, but basically North Carolina, Georgia, Arizona, Nevada is incredibly close. I think Harris ekes it out there, but Trump could take her out. Like, everyone's shown that place even. We had Harris plus one, but it's been really, really close in that contest. So in my mind, I think it really comes down to the blue wall. If Harris is able to hold the blue wall, so Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, she will have exactly 270 electoral votes is what you need. You don't need any more than that. You just need 270. And so I think in my mind, I think a lot of it really comes down to which way Pennsylvania goes. And if Harris lands up winning Pennsylvania, the next state that she could potentially lose is Wisconsin. I think she's in a better position in Michigan of the three. Basically that calculus. So I think a lot of it's going to hinge on Pennsylvania. And here's a quick stat for folks on the presidential, because I talk about this one a lot. There's a lot of anxiety out there on both sides when it comes to this election. And everyone's looking for some big breakaway. And here's the reality. In 2016, the number of votes that would have separated the winner and loser of the key states in the Electoral College, the key states that would have like changed the outcome, like Arizona, for example, in 1 year was like 11,000 votes. So the key number is about 70,000 votes in total that separated whether Hillary was going to be president or Trump. And then 2020, it was about 40,000 votes that would have changed the calculus of who would have won, frankly, the Electoral College. So, I mean, both those elections were incredibly close and were very still polarized. So I'm expecting a closer election, but everyone's kind of looking for someone to run away with it. And what I advise folks is tonight, they probably won't call the winner tonight and just have a little patience, because remember, they got to count the ballots. And when it's a really close race, you don't usually know the winner right away, because you got to get through enough of the votes to be able to make that determination.
Well, Mike, I tell you, you did a good job of answering that question to avoid having to be put on the spot on any others. I told you this time's going to fly, and it did.
I've been doing this a while, so you learned. We'll see, because you think the polls, it's all about, did you vote? Like, if you don't vote, you get your opinion all day.
No,
it doesn't matter.
Agreed. So everybody get out and vote. That's Mike Noble with Noble Predictive Insights. I will have him back. You're listening to Jump in Tucson, and thanks again, Mike. Appreciate it.
You got it. Thanks, Ted. See ya.
Good morning, and welcome back to Jump in Tucson. You're listening to the Engagement Hour. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. Matt Neely's behind the glass. And we had a discussion this morning with Mike Noble from Noble Predictive Insights and talk about the polling. And he effectively made sure he didn't give us too many of his predictions. But I know him, and I told him I'm bringing him back, and we're going to hold him accountable at some point. But this second half of that half hour, and we're going to go with to Jaime Molera, the founder and managing partner of Molera Alvarez. If you want more information on his firm, ma-firm.com is where you'll find it. He runs a government and public affairs firm, one that, for full disclosure, is our partner with the Southern Arizona Leadership Council on what we do at the state legislature. Jaime, glad to have you on, taking some time away for us on Election Day.
Well, good morning, and please don't hold me accountable, will you?
Hey, anything you say on predictions, I won't hold you accountable for. I know, but I know how much insight you have. And today, I was on Wake Up Tucson with Chris earlier. We talked a little bit more about local and some federal, and Mike focused on a little bit of the federal races. What I'd really like to talk about is, what is our legislature going to look like next year, and what are you hearing and seeing up at the state, up at the great state of Maricopa?
It's going to be interesting, Ted. All signs point to a very, very tight, and we may not know after today. As we know, it takes a while, and some of these very tight races, we could actually see a runoff on quite a few of them. The legislature changed the law so that now you have to win by at least 0.5%. It used to be just 0.1%. So that's a pretty good margin. And so if you're talking about somebody winning maybe by 100 votes, depending on the area, you could see a lot of runoffs take place.
So let me.
I still think. Go ahead.
No, real quick, I want to ask something there, because if that's something I missed, so does it result in a runoff or a recount?
I'm sorry, I misspoke. Yes, a recount.
Okay.
But it takes a while to process them, as we all know, and they have to do it all over again. So we may not know the winners, at least for a week or maybe 2 weeks.
You know, absolutely. You just scared me there for a little bit, because I'm going, oh, if we've got a runoff, this election, it's a long time. So I'm sorry to interrupt your thought process, but knowing that there's maybe a lot of recounts, what's that? How's that impacting what you're thinking is going to be the outcomes?
Well, I still think, and I've said this to a number of organizations around the state, I still think the Republicans very slightly will keep control of the legislature. I think there was a couple of key races in the primaries. For instance, Vince Leach down in Maricopa/Pinal County. That one, District 17, him winning the primary, as we all know, I think gave the Republicans a much better shot of holding on to that seat. And that was one I know, and it still is, you know, the Democrats have put a lot of money into McClain and really pushed hard to try and take it away. But I think Vince was not seen as that extreme of a candidate, which should be able to help him.
And speaking of LD-17, since you're on it, what are you hearing about the House race? Kevin Volk has run a pretty solid campaign down here as a single-shot candidate against the two incumbents, Corey Magar and Rachel Jones. What's your gut telling you?
Well, that's one where the Democrats could actually pick up one. Again, Volk has received a lot of money. About 3 weeks ago, the Democrats were able to get another $4.5 million. From the National Democrat Legislative Council. And the Republicans really didn't have that much money left. So it'll be interesting to see if that last-minute push could help people. And I know District 17 was one of the areas that the Democrats wanted to focus in, both in trying for the Senate seat and also, like you said, getting Volk single shot as one of their candidates.
Well, we've talked a lot about the influence a governor can have, where in this case she would have either one of the houses support there, or either one of the chambers be of her party. The last 2 years, we've seen a lot with two Republican chambers and a Democratic governor. We've seen 11 propositions or referrals to the ballot, you know, take it straight to the voters, which personally I think the public and the voters don't make legislation. That's up to the legislature, and they need to figure out how to do that. But keeping, you know, the makeup of those chambers will determine. So you mentioned the Senate. We'll start there. Right now it's a 16-14 Republican advantage. Sounds like there's a belief that former Senator Leach will return to the chamber as a senator. Mm-hmm. How do the other tight races, and which one should we be watching to see the outcome of whether that stays a Republican-controlled legislature or potentially a 15-15?
Well, I think some of the key races are going to be, let's stay in the Senate. Legislative District 2, which is up in the North Phoenix area around Anthem. Shauna Bullock is trying to keep that seat for the Republicans, and that's probably one of the mostly highly contested races against Judy Schwiebert. Judy's a current House member, but is running now for the Senate to try and take that away. I think also we just mentioned LD 17 with McClain and Leach. I also think the other race in the Senate, maybe to look at a little bit, is one that the Democrats are trying to hold on to, Christine Marsh. She's the current incumbent in Legislative District 4, which is more in the Arcadia, Phoenix, Scottsdale area. She's running against candidate Werner that's surprisingly done fairly strong. So I think those are the key races to watch.
What do you think about LD9? The only reason I say that is that's one that the Democrats had held both the House and the Senate seats, yet it's a Republican-leaning district. I mean, not by much, about 2%.
Correct.
So how do you think that one might pan out? Or
well, the problem has been, in the last election, the candidates were very, very hard right. And I think that's been problematic for the Republicans, especially when you have these split districts, Ted. You know, I think a lot of the centrists and Republican women, for instance, tend to be, will vote with the Democrats if they feel that those candidates don't represent them. You know, it's interesting. One of the big issues, as you know, is Proposition 139, the referendum to change the Constitution on whether or not when people can, if they can get an abortion and the time it takes to do it. I think having that on the ballot might be a pressure valve release for the Republicans in a lot of way, because Republican women can go ahead and say, you know, let's take care of this issue on that initiative. Then I'll go back and vote the Republicans because, you know, they're still concerned about border security and the economy and inflation. So those things are still very much top of mind, and they are polling very, very strongly, which is why a lot of people still think that Donald Trump's going to have success here, because when that's at the top of the ticket, Republicans, or at least on top of people's mindsets, Republicans tend to do a lot better.
And that's the voice of Jaime Molera with Molera Alvarez. And Jaime, I think that's a great point that you just brought up. I've been saying that I believe there will be a lot of what I call split ballots. So mm-hmm. folks are going to vote maybe not in alignment with their party, but that's going to predominantly be on the propositions and on the top of the ticket. So president, Senate, maybe even for your Correct. Congressional district. But once they get down ballot, that's when that loyalty to the party really tends to kick in. And also it's when people tend to know less about the candidates other than the letter next to their name. So that's a great point you brought up there. And we'll see how it plays out in LD9. That's one that I think there hasn't been enough attention given to statewide. So we've talked about the Senate. Three districts there that the Republicans have to hold to keep that 16-4 vote, mm-hmm. and one that the Democrats have to hold as well. So that's a potential. What about the House? Because for a long time I thought the House was safe, and the Senate was the worry. And now it seems that the House is the one that, if the party is going to make a change from Republican to Democrat, it might be in the House. So are you hearing any of that?
Well, yeah, and we mentioned a couple of these. So, for instance, if Volk is able to be single shot, that certainly will cut, you know, they'll make it a tie. And then there's State Representative Pena, who won in LD 23, which is in outside of Yuma. It's kind of more the south western part of Arizona. But Pena was a surprise last time. A lot of people didn't think, you know, they were shocked that she won in a pretty Democrat-leaning district. So I know the Democrats have poured in a lot of money to try and take her out. The good news for the Republicans is Pena is actually a very good candidate. She's very well-liked, and I know she's a tenacious campaigner. So that one, from what I've seen, has been a toss-up as well. I would just say the other couple of other races to watch would be in LD 16, which is more Pinal County. The Democrats have one of the seats right now with Keith Seaman, And Republicans, I think, have a very good chance with a newcomer, Chris Lopez, joining the majority whip, Martinez, to maybe take one of those seats back. So I know that's a big one, as well as in Legislative District 13, Jeff Winninger is trying to come back to the legislature, and he's very popular. So if he can join Julie Willoughby, that's another seat the Republicans can take back. So all in all, there's a few races to look out for tonight.
All right, so I'm going to put you on the spot. What's your prediction? Senate, House, what will the makeup be come next January?
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say it stays the same. I think it's going to be 31-29 and 16-14. Again, I think with Trump's ability to do well, that's going to help more of the down-ticket candidates, especially the legislative candidates. And, Ted, I think your point was absolutely right. When people really don't know about those folks, they tend to go back home to their respective parties. And if the Republicans are turning out in a higher number and more motivated to vote because of the Trump factor, then that could bode well for a lot of these legislative races.
Well, there's no doubt if it all stays the same, that means folks that work in that public policy space will have a lot of work to do trying to get anything through the legislature in the next couple years. So I guess that bodes well for both of our professions.
That's right. We'll have a lot to do.
So Jaime, when we come back, I'm going to let you kind of take it where you want, whether you want to go to the ballot propositions or if you want to talk what your feel on some of the federal and statewide elections will be. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk, and we'll be back in just 2 minutes. Welcome back. You're listening to Jump in Tucson, the Engagement Hour. My guest today is Jaime Molera with Molera Alvarez. Jaime, appreciated that insight, but I'm not going to get to something new yet because we've got a caller all the way from the other side of the glass. Matt, do you have a question for Jaime?
Well, so let's say the governor does get what she wants and she gets her legislature, which she poured all of her inauguration ball money into, right? So she's invested in this thing. Is that good news for her, or is there peril for her if the legislature starts passing legislation that might not be helpful to her in 2026 for reelection?
No, I think that's a very, very good point, because there's been a lot of discussions, a lot of the rumor mill, and I know a lot of the high-level Democrat operatives that have made no bones about the fact that they'd like to have one of the houses, but not both, because then it would put a lot of pressure on Hobbs to pursue more progressive policies that I don't believe fits with Arizona. Arizona, in my opinion, is still a center-right state, and with a strong candidate, and there's a number of candidates already lining up. And unfortunately, the day after this election that we're all excited about finally getting past us starts the next election. So it never ends. And they're going to be out there in force. So I think that that's something that they're going to be concerned about. If they control both houses, the progressive and union and left-leaning organizations are going to put a lot of pressure on Governor Hobbs to lead the charge on things that they feel needs to get done.
She could even break her own veto record.
Well, a lot of Republicans would hope she would veto them, but I don't think she will. So, she might sign a lot of bills.
So, Jaime, quick follow-up on that. So what if the Democratic Party does take one of the two houses? What do you see then?
Well, I mean, it's still gridlock. I mean, we have the same scenario. If the Republicans control either house, right, then they're in a position I wouldn't say on all bills, but on probably 95% of them, where they could make sure that their caucus is such that they're not going to break from their leadership and they're not going to help the governor at all, because they want to try and put her in a position, in a weakened state so that in 2 years, Republicans can try and take back everything.
Well, we'll definitely have to get you back on another segment after the New Year's, probably, to discuss kind of that. As we finally have the results of this one and we go into, like you said, the next most important election of our lifetime, which is always the next one. We'll have to discuss those. So I'm going to let you take this to any of the current remaining offices we haven't talked about or any of the propositions? What are the ones that you're watching more closely?
I do want to talk a little bit about, because I think it's historic nationally, that we could see not only, you know, ever since I think it was Garfield was the president come back again into office, but also having a double flip. You know, you could see the GOP House right now become Democrat, and there's a good chance of that. You can see the Democrat Senate now flip to a Republican Senate. So it's just fascinating how all this is playing out, and we're seeing it here. We're on the front lines with Congressional District 1 between Schweikert and Shaw, and then, of course, on down in southern Arizona, Congressional District 6 with Juan Sisquimani against Engel. You're seeing a lot of money put into those races that we've never seen before. And that's why we're just inundated right now with all these ads, TV, radio, everything.
It's been crazy down here, Jaime, to your point on CD6. The amount of text, rope, phone calls, mailers, it's just been nonstop. So interesting scenario there, though. The House, obviously, all members of the House have to run every 2 years. So if that was to change, it sends one message. But on the Senate side, you only got about a third of the senators that have to run every election cycle.
Correct.
And that one definitely favors the Republicans because of one, West Virginia was held by a Democrat, but a very red state. And there's other ones that they've got more opportunities to pick up seats in the Senate than the Democrats do. What kind of message do you think that sends? Yep, yeah, Montana for sure.
Well, it's interesting because Arizona should have been one of those states. And I've said this before. I think Kerry Lake's being an unpopular candidate, even amongst a lot of Republicans, I think really hurt Republicans' chances. Had, hypothetically, Doug Ducey run for the U.S. Senate and won, I think we'd be calling him Senator Ducey tomorrow. But having said that, I think the Democrats have a great opportunity to hold that particular seat. But it's only one of the few ones that they have opportunities for. And you're right, Ted, the way it worked out is that you have about six or seven possibility for the Republicans to flip. The Democrats really don't have that many opportunities to flip. So they have to be perfect in order to maintain the Senate.
Absolutely. Jaime, as always, I appreciate your insight. Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you. It's always a pleasure to be on.
And if there's ever a Wake Up Tucson show you want to listen to tomorrow with Grant Krueger at 9 o'clock, he's bringing in Josh Jacobson to talk about what they learned tonight.
Jump in Tucson.
Jump
at
in
9
Tucson.
O'clock.
Yeah, Wake Up Tucson's at 6.
You can listen to both.
It's still okay. Good. Join them both. And thank you for joining us, listening to Jump in Tucson on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk.